Real families, real farms, real food. Welcome to Arizona Agriculture Connection with Maricopa County Farm Bureau. My name is Nicole Clements, Executive Director, and I'll be your host. Maricopa County Farm Bureau is the voice of agriculture in a community that thrives on the dichotomy of urban and rural agriculture operations. This podcast is a home for farmers, ranchers, food lovers, prospective agriculturalists, and those looking to connect the food on their plate with the farm that it came from. As we take an inside look at agriculture in Arizona, we will delve into topics like ag technology, policy, food preparation, and everything in between. You can find us on your favorite podcast platform with new episodes every Wednesday. Arizona Agriculture Connection is hosted by Maricopa County Farm Bureau and sponsored by Paloma Ready Mix and Materials, a proud supporter of agriculture and our communities. Be sure to subscribe and share your favorite episodes with your friends. For more interactions, follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Maricopa County FB. Now let's discover some Arizona agriculture. All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Arizona Agriculture Connection. And it's almost June, which means we're wrapping up beef month. And so today I am super excited to have with me Tiffany from Arizona Beef Council and Aaron, who is part of Iowa Beef. And Aaron is a registered dietitian, and Tiffany works with all of the Arizona beef initiatives here locally. So we're going to chat today about beef and why you love it. So thanks for joining me, ladies.
Thanks for having us. We're so glad to be here.
Thanks, Nicole.
Well, Aaron, why don't you give us a little introduction, kind of what's your story? How did you get to where you are at Iowa Beef?
Yeah, so I joined Iowa Beef Council in January of this year. So I'm 5 months in. Learning a lot, definitely being boots on the ground. Last week actually did a farm to plate tour, incredibly immersive experience with 25 dietitians with Nebraska Beef Council and Kansas Beef Council. So what's really neat is with all of our different state beef councils is still getting to partner with other states. You know, we're all spreading the same message about growing the demand for beef, but also then putting our science and nutrition expertise behind it. So before joining Iowa Beef Council, I was actually in retail. So I worked for Hy-Vee, a large grocery store chain in the Midwest here. And I did that for 12 and a half years. And that background really let me hear what were consumers thinking about beef? What were their barriers to cooking, the costs, maybe the taste? And then I also would get referrals from doctors. And so through that, I could see, you know, what were the doctors saying about the patient's health as far as heart health, cholesterol, blood pressure? Were they recommending beef? Were they up to date on the latest science? So now I get to merge that, you know, insight and background to my current role as the Director of Nutrition and Health with Iowa Beef Council, and I get to partner with Arizona Beef. And that's how I was connected with Tiffany.
Yeah, we're really fortunate at the Arizona Beef Council. We're a small staff with low numbers. So the Beef Checkoff is a unique program for beef producers. Every beef animal that's sold, $1 of that sale price comes back to the Beef Checkoff to Arizona Beef Council. So we are grassroots organizations where we collect the checkoff dollar in state. 50 cents of that dollar stays in our state, respectively, and then 50 cents goes back to the Cattlemen's Beef Board. These dollars are only used for promotion, education, and research. With our numbers here in Arizona, we're relatively small cattle producing states. And so we're really fortunate to work and be able to partner with other states like Iowa. So with the Iowa Beef Industry Council, we've been fortunate to request and have been funded grant monies to do more promotions here in Arizona. So the Iowa Beef Industry Council board sees it appropriate to send funds to larger cities. So Phoenix is the fifth largest city in the United States. And we're really lucky to be able to benefit from those grant dollars. With that being said, neither Lauren Mailing, the executive director of the Beef Council, nor I are registered dietitians, but we do quite extensive work with our registered dietitians here in Arizona and then also with dietetic interns. Those are folks that are working on becoming registered dietitians. And so we need experts that are registered dietitians, but are also experts in beef. And so we're really fortunate to be able to partner with folks like Aaron Good and others from other beef councils, and then also from our other beef checkoff contractors, like the National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
Such a unique partnership, and I think kind of really speaks to the mission of education and, you know, how do we continue just keeping people up to date with what's happening and, you know, Why is beef an ideal protein? So, kind of diving into it here, we've all heard beef, it's what for dinner, right? We love Sam Elliott, it's fantastic. But what really makes beef such a go-to protein source for consumers to put on their plate?
I do love the slogan. It's very catchy and memorable. And I feel like now we're trying to remix it a little bit. Like beef, it's what's for dinner and breakfast, or beef, it's what's for dinner all day long. One thing that's really come out in the last year or two, I would say, is the rise of GLP-1 medications. So those are your injectable medications that people are using dominantly for weight loss. And so 1 in 8 consumers are on a GLP-1 medication. And that means they are seeking protein first. As dietitians, we're being educated and trained to really make sure when you're working one-on-one with that consumer or patient that they're getting adequate protein. And so this is where beef is a perfect match for this consumer because it's so rich in protein. In just a 3 ounce serving, or the size of your palm serving, is going to provide 25 grams of protein. And not providing excessive calories either, so that consumer can get the adequate protein they need and not feel so full where they and stuffed where they can't eat other foods still.
That's a great example. And then we talk a lot about, and I think being a mom myself, I think a lot about childhood nutrition. And kids can be really picky eaters. My daughter is quite the picky eater, but I feel as though I have succeeded a little bit in my motherhood journey that she does love steak and beef products. And I always feel great when she eats a steak because I know she's getting half of her protein for the day, almost half of her protein needs for the day. And like Erin said, she's getting 10 or 9 other great nutrients in her body with relatively low calories. Just makes a mom feel good that she's out there eating her beef. I do think it's interesting to talk about all the ways we can incorporate beef into children's diets. So, and Erin might be able to speak to this a little bit better as she is the expert, but the Dietary Guidelines for Americans, which now is getting ready to roll over again, but recommended animal proteins for the first time for a child, children 6 months and older. And so there's so many ways that we can cook beef for all the different ages. So when they're little bitty, 6 months, just starting to eat foods, we can puree some ground beef and add a little bit of seasoning to that. And that's quite enjoyable. One of the things that we did with my daughter when she was young is you could take a steak and cut it into long strips. And so her little hands could grab a strip and she would kind of just gnaw on the piece of beef and kind of suck those nutrients out. And even that is really great for those kiddos to get all those nutrients and what they need in their bodies.
Tiffany, I was joking, like someone needs to go on Shark Tank or like make like a steak lollipop or like a steak push-up pop that, yeah, you can just suck on a strip of beef and you're getting better iron absorption than you are in iron fortified cereal, which I know, busy moms, like that is something it's a staple, it's a go-to, and it can still fit. But as far as like absorption amounts, you're getting 6 times better absorption because the beef has heme iron versus non-heme iron.
That's a great detail and so important.
I'm still stuck on the beef, it's what's for breakfast thing.
Yeah.
So, what's your favorite beef for breakfast? In all fairness, I was a hog farmer. So, it was definitely a pork household. But what's your favorite beef recipe for breakfast?
Actually, that's a great question, Nicole, because as dietitians, we're really trying to make sure people are getting enough protein spaced out throughout the day. We tend to do a pretty good job at dinner. If anything, we go too protein heavy at dinner and we really want it to start our day. And especially for school age kids, I know school's getting out of season now, but it helps them with energy and focus and concentration. And if we get protein earlier in the day, usually the research will support you're less likely to overeat or binge eat later in the evening. So I really like beef breakfast sausage was something I was introduced to while joining the Beef Council. You take ground beef. So last night I actually used 96% lean ground beef because I was being a little bit lazy. I didn't want to bother having to, drain the grease, but this is where you have flexibility. You could easily drain the grease, pat it dry, rinse the beef even if you want to cut more of the fat. But I use 96% lean ground beef, and then I add in sage, a little garlic, onion, but the sage really makes it bring out that breakfast sausage flavor you want. And then I actually mix it with some scrambled eggs and I put it in a muffin tin. So now I have these beef sausage and egg muffin cups that are ready to go. A serving is 2 of them and you get 25 grams of protein.
That's impressive.
Sounds delicious. And I think that kind of leads into a question that I had. So a lot of people will go to the store and they'll see all the different varieties of ground beef, right? Like 90-10, 80-20. So you talk about maybe draining after it's cooked, so draining it, or so what is the best option, or how will people decide what is the best option for them to buy? Because there is a significant price difference in a lot of those.
Yes. So, like, if you want to do an 80-20, because usually that is more likely to be on sale at the grocery store, by all means, you can. We have research showing you just cook it. We want you then to drain as much of the grease as possible and then rinse it. And by doing that, you're significantly cutting the fat. And then I would add my sage, my garlic and onion powder, my seasonings afterwards. However, even our research says you can add it and then rinse it and drain it. I just prefer to add it afterwards for extra flavor. I think it just depends on your preference. But this way, you can meet the customer or the consumer where they're at as far as budget goes. Last night at the grocery store, so I'm shopping after the busy Memorial Day holiday at 7 p.m. wasn't ideal. So, like, the 90% lean ground beef was all gone, the 93% was all gone. So, I opted for the 96 just because I was cooking late at night. And, I was using time as my decision maker last night.
Well, and that's one of the great things about living in the country we do. So we often talk with our dietetic interns that we work with or other consumers when they ask us about all the different kinds of beef and what there is and which one's best. And it's really amazing that we live in a country where we can produce some of, I would say, the most healthy, best quality beef in the world. And then we have all these options on top of it. So, quite frankly, when consumers ask me that question, I say, whatever your preference is, you're going to have a good beef product, whether you're buying it directly from the rancher or you're going to the grocery store. It's all raised, the majority of it, 96% of it's raised by family farms. And they are all very invested in making sure that they do a good job raising their cattle to produce delicious beef and using the resources of the land wisely and making sure they conserve those resources too.
Absolutely. I think a lot of times when people are planning their meals or they're looking at recipes, they get stuck because a lot of times beef will be on the higher price end compared to some other proteins and wonder, is it worth it? And I think what I've seen a lot is that you can substitute different cuts. If a recipe calls for a specific cut, you can substitute whatever you can find or whatever's on sale. And I think that's kind of, the beauty of cooking, and I love to cook, but you can tailor that to whatever your needs are, your budget, or whatever that looks like to you. Could you give maybe some examples of some easy swaps for different cuts of beef?
Yeah, Nicole, that's spot on. I'll say this time of year, or I feel like now, whenever we're educating health professionals, whether it's chefs, dietitians, physicians, we're trying to talk about more value cuts. So maybe, yeah, beef products that are maybe people aren't as familiar with. So right now, I know, like, I've been promoting a lot of flank steak because it's very versatile. They can use it in fajitas. I was promoting around Cinco de Mayo, and it was very easy to swap out for maybe a more expensive cut.
So one of my favorite ways to buy beef in the grocery store and save money is to cook once, dine twice, or three times, or four times. So my favorite cut of beef is the flat iron steak. It's my absolute favorite. I love the flavor. I think it's actually the second most tender cut in the whole animal. Fun fact, it actually comes out of the shoulder, which if you know anything about cutting beef, that's really surprising that that's the second most tender cut, but it is because of where it sits behind the shoulder blade. It's really cool if you want to dive down into that meat science nerd world. But anyway, it's a long kind of rectangular shape and it's great on the grill. You could put whatever seasonings you want on there, throw that on the grill, grill it for an evening meal, slice it up into little thin slices, have your 3 ounces or so serving. And then the next morning, we like to chop it up and put it in our scrambled eggs. And then it's great for lunch with some veggies. And then even I could even stretch it as far as doing dinner and doing some sort of burrito with the leftovers that next evening. And so that'll feed my family of three for four meals. And so that's one of my favorite ways to do that. Or with a roast. We love roasts in our house. I think my husband is the roast master. He does a great job of seasoning them, but a nice round roast in the crock pot all day long, and then you come in the evening and it smells amazing and your house smells so good. And those are some of the ways that we work on saving money there.
And I even just love, I mean, like on beefitswhatsfordinner.com, there, like every recipe you're looking up, you know, if you have a recipe in mind, or if you just want to, you have a cut in mind, the website will then show you similar cuts. So you could always keep that in mind too, if you wanted to swap the cut, depending on what's on sale or, you know, fits your budget.
BeefIt'sWhatsForDinner.com is such an immense resource. And it's also a really good example of how checkoff dollars are used, too. So when a producer asks me to give them an example of a large checkoff funded program, Beef It's What's For Dinner, it first of all is a beautiful website. And if you know anything about how much it costs to make a website, it is expensive just to make the website, much less maintain the website at the level that the Beef It's What's For Dinner site is done. So Beef It's What's For Dinner is a program that is put together by the National Academy of Beef Association using checkoff dollars that they request. And so we have chefs on staff at NCBA, and part of their job is developing recipes. And so we have a whole culinary center up there in Denver where the office is that has food service set up. So if you're in a restaurant set up, but it also has a home kitchen set up. And so they make these recipes. They want to make sure they're healthy, low in sodium, make sure they're easily done, easily made by the average consumer. And then they actually test them 3 times on these different platforms to make sure that someone can replicate it at home. So they do all this work to just develop recipes. But then when you go on the website, they also take beautiful photos, which then helps our consumers to want to eat them if they look beautiful, but then also helps us when we're talking to media or we're sharing on social media. It helps in so many ways. So I did pull up, we have the simple steak swaps graphic that you can find on Beef It's What's For Dinner. And one of the first ones, it shows a whole list of some of our higher end cuts. So like the tenderloin, the ribeye, the T-bone. And then on the right hand side, it shows different alternatives. So for a tenderloin steak, if you don't want to drop the big bucks for that one, the strip steak is actually a really great alternative. And then it kind of goes down as you go down, even the strip steak over is on the left-hand side showing there's other alternatives you can do to swap out for a more value cut. Like a top sirloin steak is a great alternative to your strip steak.
I think in an era where people are extremely budget conscious, right? Because nature of the beast, as we've seen inflation at the grocery store rise, our grocery bills are increasing. So I think, you know, maybe one of the first things that people cut out a lot of times from their grocery budget would be beef. But when you look at it from like a value per dollar nutritionally, is that kind of puts beef at the top of that list as far as, you know, a priority item. If I'm not mistaken.
Because if we're comparing, you know, like this 3 ounce serving size of beef to some of our other proteins, it's still containing 3 times more iron than chicken, and it has 7 times more zinc than chicken. I know sometimes that can be a default in families, households. As dietitians, we really just want protein variety. That way you do get all your essential nutrients and your vitamins and minerals in adequate amounts. But as far as, yeah, getting the most bang for your buck, beef is definitely, you know, reigns supreme, and you're absorbing it very well as well. Because if we're going to go plant-based and just eat a bunch of beans or quinoa or peanut butter, those are all great proteins and nutritious, but you have to eat, you know, up to 6 times those plant proteins to get as much protein as you would in beef. And it's just not realistic. No one's going to eat 6 cups of quinoa. I mean, that would be.
That sounds miserable, honestly.
Maybe for one day you could, but then you'd be like, no, I'm good the next day.
Probably talking to the wrong crowd, but even still.
Yeah, like I don't mind quinoa, but that's a lot.
Yeah, quinoa is great next to steak.
Yeah, so I think beef is such a good, I call it a vessel, because you're not just going to eat steak. You're going to then add in some other vitamins and minerals with your produce or your vegetables. You add some type of grain. Hopefully you'll have some kind of fruit for some extra color and sweetness. So you're going to get a really well-rounded and well-balanced plate that will nourish you for days to come.
Remind me, Erin, beef actually helps us absorb other nutrients from other foods, right? More easily.
Yes. What do we call it? The beef factor, I want to say is what we call it. Because beef has this heme iron, you only can absorb heme iron from animal products, but our plant foods do have non-heme iron, and you absorb it better when beef is present at that meal, or you need some type of vitamin C at the meal, like bell peppers, to absorb the iron better. As far as like you're spending the money, but then you also want to absorb it well. And so beef is really like a double threat in that sense.
So, what you're telling me is that fajitas is like the super meal.
It really is, if you think about it. Yeah.
One of the best meals.
Yeah.
I
think any meal that's like colorful, it has more than one food group present, and as I mean, added bonus if you can put it all in one pan or a sheet pan or yeah, those check all the boxes.
Especially on those weeknight dinners.
Yeah. Yeah. If I can do everything in one pan, golden.
Yeah. So we talk about beef being kind of, for a lack of a non-buzzword term, kind of like a superfood, right? And with that, I think a lot of people consider beef to be, especially when we talk about lean beef, right? A lot of people consider it to only be really necessary for athletes or, people who are extremely into bodybuilding and weightlifting and people that are only really focused on protein goals, right? We hear a lot about protein on the internet, but is that a misconception? Is that true? Who should be focusing on beef proteins? Is it just those athletes or is it everyone?
Ooh, that's a great one, Nicole. So, like Tiffany mentioned, beef for babies is of growing interest. And I would say the research is really starting to support that. We're getting more and more research studies coming out that baby needs more iron and that breast milk can't provide enough iron after 6 months. And so, this is where pureed beef can be a great first food for baby, and it helps expose them to different textures and taste. So, that's one audience that could really benefit. But then if I think of younger women and older, I don't want to say this, like teens and up, really, women are more likely to become iron deficient or have iron deficiency anemia. And beef is a great source of iron. And again, from that absorption standpoint, you're going to absorb it even better. So beef would be perfect for that audience, whether they are a female athlete or not. And then even as the older adult, I think of our parents and grandparents, they're living longer, but they need that protein to maintain their lean muscle mass and be strong. And so beef is great for them as well as they age, because they basically say after age 30, we start losing our lean muscle mass every decade. And so by having adequate protein in our diet from beef as one of those foods, that's going to help preserve our lean muscle mass so they can still go up the stairs or they can still do their day-to-day activities.
I know the average consumer maybe doesn't think of beef as being convenient, but when you talk about the nutrient content and then, putting a steak on the grill really isn't all that challenging considering all the nutrients you're getting. I do think that the convenience does come out to be quite important for a lot of busy families. It's so easy to put a steak, in a cast iron skillet or put it on the grill, cook it in 5 to 10 minutes, and then you're done. And there's this protein that contains all of these nutrients that Aaron's been telling us about too. So that's one of the things we try to really convey to consumers when we're talking to them or sharing on social media, is how easy it is to cook with beef. And then just having, as a mom, as a middle-aged woman, knowing and having that reassurance that I have those nutrients going into my family makes me feel really good.
We talk a lot about macros, kind of in that nutrition and fitness industry, but I think we forget about the macronutrients that we really need and can't always be supplemented as efficiently as it could be with just whole foods like beef.
In regards to micronutrients, foods that support our mental health. So I know we joked about like calling beef a superfood, but then it really does take it to the next level because it has B12, which you only can get from animal products. Otherwise, you have to supplement. And that's one of the biggest vitamins that supports our mental health and our nervous system functioning properly. And then beef also provides choline, which is something normally you would get in an egg yolk. And again, you're probably not eating egg yolks, every day, all day. And choline's really important to keep our brain cells healthy. So when we think of also kind of the way the consumer and the world is going, we care more about eating foods that support our mental health. And beef can be part of that big picture, which is really exciting. And we have more research coming. I know it's in the works right now. So again, just another example of checkoff dollars being used to support the latest research and what's to come.
I know people are often looking for more connection to where their food's coming from, right? So, they want to support local farmers and ranchers. They want to know where it's coming from, who's raising it, that sort of thing. Are there resources out there for consumers to be able to find that local product or even find out what they're purchasing in the store, where that's coming from?
We have some really incredible resources across Arizona here. So, whenever someone asks me where they can purchase local beef from, my favorite resource to shoot them to is fillyourplate.org, which is an Arizona Farm Bureau resource online. They have a great list of producers that are able and want to sell, halves or even retail cuts to people. So, that's a good resource if someone's looking for that direct purchase from a rancher or a beef farmer. At the Arizona Beef Council, one of our main goals on social media is sharing all sorts of beef information, but also sharing the people that are out there raising cattle, whether it's on a cow-calf operation or at a feed yard, or even our dairy men and women who are part of this whole life cycle too. So we try to make sure that on those social media platforms, we're talking about what people are doing, how they're conserving the land, the projects they do to make sure that their cattle are well taken care of, but also that the land is well taken care of and the wildlife that's out there too. We also have the Arizona Beef blog, which has been going for, I think, almost a decade now, which is pretty wild to say. It isn't necessarily updated regularly, but there's so much information from stories that we've done. We have some stories in the works coming up. Just a great resource talking about. We do a Meet Your Farmer profile on there so you can learn more in depth about farmers and ranchers raising beef cattle here in Arizona or dairy cattle. So those are probably some of our best resources for that. I'll dive into one of my favorite programs that we do at the Beef Council is what we call our Gate to Plate tours. And these tours also started a long time ago, 11 years ago. The Beef Council has had a long history of taking people out to ranches too, long before I came on. But with these Gate to Plate tours, we've really focused in on our dietetic interns, which we talked about earlier. These are people that have completed an undergraduate degree and now are going on to get their schooling to then be able to test for to be a registered dietitian, which I've heard is quite tricky, and Aaron could probably share more about that process with us. But there's a lot of details and just so much work that these people have to do to learn about humans and nutrition needs. And so a lot of times our beef industry kind of gets skipped over. So we are really fortunate to build some relationships with Arizona State University, the Maricopa County Intern Program, the University of Arizona, and then most recently Grand Canyon University, working with their nutrition students and also those working on their registered dietitian degrees. And with those students, we have found that people really want to meet, like you were saying, they want to meet the rancher. They want to meet the people that are out there raising cattle. And so we want to give them that chance to meet someone one-on-one and have a conversation with them and feel like in the future, when someone asks them a question, that maybe they don't have the answer necessarily, but they have a resource of somebody they can think back to and think, oh, I met Mike and Amy Doyle at their ranch, and they really left an impression on me. And so I could reach out to them and maybe ask them that question. Or on the flip side, us at the Beef Council is also a good resource for them to be connected to as well. So on these tours, we generally take them to a ranch or a feed yard. Sometimes we try to slam a whole lot into one day, and then people are really tired. But we want to expose them as much as we can to the beef life cycle. And then we're really fortunate to partner with people like Aaron Good or other registered dietitians within our beef industry that come on the tour with us. So they're a resource all day. And then they give a presentation about beef and nutrition in humans and how beef affects their nutrition. And so that's a really good way to expose who are people who are going to become influencers over other people's dietary choices early on in their career. And the hope is that they'll remember this experience and take that with them. Now, having done these tours for almost a decade, we have gotten feedback. It's really cool. We do sponsorships with the Arizona Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics every year, which is our association for our registered dietitians. And just this last, it was in May, they had their conference. I heard from so many people that are now in their careers that are still talking about our tours and how much they impacted them. We've seen a big shift in the culture of that association through various leaders that have come through that have been part of the animal industry and then went over to the registered dietitian field. But also, we'd like to think that this is also our tours have had an impact on this group too. And they're much more friendly to animal proteins nowadays.
I will say, so as a registered dietitian, and I grew up in Iowa, I did my undergrad at Iowa State University, very heavy or like well-known ag school. However, throughout my 4 years of schooling, we never did any type of farm tour. To be honest, I had never been on a farm until after becoming a registered dietitian. So to piggyback on what Tiffany says, it's incredibly memorable. My first farm tour was actually a poultry tour, but I remember I still would use some of those nuggets or what I had learned from that experience throughout my 12 and a half years counseling people one-on-one. And so now by having these dietitians learn about beef, learn about grain finished versus grass finished, learn about omega-3s, all of these questions are going to be asked by their family, their friends, and then those pain patients, whether that's in an outpatient setting, whether that's in the hospital, whether they go into sports nutrition, whether they work in pediatrics. Again, beef is important no matter the age and across the lifespan. So I couldn't stress enough the importance of these gate-to-plate immersive experiences because the dietitian will remember it for life, because I know I did as well.
I think it would be a goal to be able to get every person out to a farmer or ranch and be able to show them, how it really works and what's done. But I think the next best thing is providing that opportunity to the people that are working with those consumers and just continuing education. And on that note, Erin, you brought it up, so we're going to talk about it. Grass-fed, grass-finished, organic. What is the difference? Is it worth it? When we're standing in front of the grocery shelf, is that when people are trying to make those decisions for themselves and what to bring home to put on their table, what do they need to know about all of these different designations and what can help them make the best choice for them?
Yeah, that's a great question. The big takeaway nowadays is don't let fear mongering, like what you're seeing on Instagram or these social media platforms, don't let that, influence you. So as far as the science, our cattle, 90% of their life, they're eating grass, they're grazing on the pasture. It's the last 4 to 6 months where they could go into a feed yard and be fed that way versus grass finished. However, the science shows it's just statistically insignificant in terms of omega-3 intake. If you're really wanting omega-3s in your diet, the science still says go eat fatty fish, go have salmon to really get the adequate omega-3s. So whenever we share that information with dietitians, especially, they are shocked. They thought grass-finished beef would have significantly more omega-3s, and it's a 0.02 difference. So when we share that science with them, again, I mean, as dietitians, we're taught to empower the consumer and share the science, but ultimately they make the decision. So if they still want to do that, we have that option. But if they're being more budget conscious, reassuring them that they can still purchase traditional beef and still get those 10 essential nutrients and be safe and, it's still okay for them, then I think we're doing our job.
So organic is all about how the cattle are raised, really more, I think, about what they're fed and where they're housed. So organic is one of the only USDA regulated labels where they go out and do inspections. And Nicole, you can always jump in too, because Nicole's the super expert on this. But all of the feed the cattle eat has to be grown in organic fields. And then they are not allowed to, so when you're growing the crop, there are certain products they can use and certain products they cannot use. And then, same with the cattle, there are certain treatments you can get or not get. So, one of the things I think really sticks out for me with organic is that they are not allowed to have any antibiotics throughout their life cycle. That being said, I don't think any producer that's raising cattle is letting those animals suffer. So, if an animal does get sick and they do have to have antibiotics, they just have to be pulled out of that group and separated, or have some sort of distinction has to be made in their records, on their ear tag, to indicate that they did receive antibiotics or no longer in that organic classification. With that being said, with the grass finish and the grain finish, there's no significant nutritional difference in organic beef compared to conventional or traditionally raised beef. And that's one of the things that I get kind of touchy about. I think, again, like I said earlier, we're in a country where we're so fortunate to live where we can have all these options that we're confused about the type of beef that you should buy at the grocery store. We should all be thanking God that we have these options and that we have this first world problem. But there's some of us in our communities that don't have that option. They have to buy whatever is the most affordable for their families. And so I do think it's important for people to know if you want to buy organic and that makes you feel better and makes you feel more trusting of beef, be my guest. But for those families that can't afford organic, I want them to know that just that regular cut of the beef at the grocery store, regular cut of beef at the grocery store is just as safe, just as nutritionally beneficial, and just as delicious as the more expensive organic cut that's next to it.
I think what we see a lot, and coming from, what I see on social media, which I think we can all attest is a big driver to the decisions that people are making at the grocery store. And it almost comes with like a sense of shame. Like I should be buying organic or I should be doing this. And I think the biggest message that I could ever tell anyone who's trying to face these decisions, and all they want to do is make a healthy choice for their family, is there's no shame associated with what you're buying at the grocery store. You're buying the foods that fit within your budget and that fuel nutrition for you and your family. And there are resources out there to answer the questions that you have. And some of them are on social media. And I'm not, dogging it in any sense of the word because it is a great resource for a lot of people. But I think my biggest point would be to verify where you're getting the information from, because not everybody on the internet is informed and educated about topics that they're speaking on, unfortunately. So if you have questions, I always encourage people in the ag industry are they want to answer your questions. And however you get a hold of them, pick up the phone and call us. Grab the number off the website, grab the email, send us a DM on social media. Any Farm Bureau, Beef Council, Dairy Council, any of these organizations are more than happy to answer your questions. And I think just kind of opening that door, making sure that that door is open for people and having them understand that it doesn't matter. You want to ask us a question, there are no silly questions when it comes to your nutrition. So just be encouraged, I think, to verify your resources and also just reach out and ask because that's what we're here for.
And I think most producers will probably gladly, answer a DM or anything like that to you. It's a good point.
I was just going to say, like, almost a call to action or a challenge to anyone who's listening to this, whether you are the dietitian, the student, or you are the farmer or the rancher, how can you connect with each other in the next, say, 6 months and do a short social media snippet, or where could you share that on the website, or how could you connect with each other? Because the more we work together and share the latest, most accurate science and stories, I think that will help all consumers.
I love it.
Absolutely.
Great call to action.
Yeah. To add to that, on our website, MaricopaCountyFB.org, on the podcast page, there is a portion at the bottom where you can submit topics that you want to hear about. So if there's something that you want to hear on this podcast that you haven't heard or you're just really curious about, go to the website, fill that out, and we'll absolutely look into it and get it on an episode.
That's so fun. I love
Hopefully, send me your ideas.
that.
I love that.
Well, ladies, I want to thank you so much for your time today. I think for funsies, let's wrap it up and tell me what is your favorite beef recipe?
I kind of already shared mine. I mean, honestly, the flatiron is just my favorite. But I think one of my favorite beef recipes, or like, I don't know, that's the fun thing about beef too, is I feel like often it comes with an experience. And so one of my favorite times is after we've gathered cattle and we have our big crew of lovely people that come out and help us. And where my husband, the ranch my husband manages, is in quite rough terrain. And so it's a lot of work. And so we'll get done and we just take some steaks and slap them on a grill out near the corrals, and just that camaraderie and, jovialness of the job well done, and the smell and the sizzle and the sound, all of those together is probably one of my favorite beef eating experiences.
I was gonna go with there is a ground beef stir fry. Of course, now I'm like, I don't know what it's titled, but what I love about it is it's a one skillet dish, and I want to say there's five vegetables in it. So it's incredibly colorful and crunchy, but then it's also customizable. So if I don't have, sugar snap peas on hand, which I don't always, which I know is in it, so what? I swap it for carrots or mushrooms or something. And I just really love how it's all in one skillet. It makes a huge amount so that I can get multiple meals from it, and yet it's very quick and easy and flavorful.
It sounds delicious.
I love that. Yeah.
I just remember, like, when I was counseling patients one-on-one, for the adult or the picky eater who didn't want to eat their vegetables on the side, if because often we would do steak, potatoes, and like carrots or something. But for either the picky adult or the picky kiddo, by mixing it in with the ground beef, sometimes that was more well tolerated or accepted, or at least tried, than when it was all separated. But now some people are the exact opposite and don't want all their food mixed together. But this is where it's so fun that you can, beef is so easy to either mix together with foods or just cook on the grill, like you said, Tiffany.
That's a great idea. I'm gonna have to try that at my house. Maybe that'll
Yeah.
help get some more vegetables into my kid.
I think the experience, shared around the meal is such like a great way to look at it. And I think we don't always think about that, but like I go to a beef stew. Very simple, but it comes with a lot of memories, right? So every time I make it, I'm thinking of that. And I get when I'm making beef stew, I'm usually making it for a lot of people. Because it's one of those easy things that
Yeah.
you can cook for a lot of people. So it's always like, it's a time that I'm excited to share over a meal with my friends, family, et cetera. But, make it an experience and make it, I know some families that have, every Monday they have this meal. And I think as you grow up and you go through adulthood and you think about that, like a lot of times that comes with a lot of good memories. And, that's what it's about too.
I say, and that's what makes beef a true superfood, because it's beyond just the nutrition component. Now you have the memories and the mental health and wellness component, and that makes you more relaxed at mealtime. You're connecting with others. I think that just takes beef to the next level.
Agreed. Agreed.
Agreed.
Such a great wrap up. I love that. That was good.
Well, thank you, ladies, so much for joining me. We really appreciate your time today. It was such a great conversation. And everybody, tune in next week for another AgriPort edition of Arizona Agriculture Connection.
Thank you for tuning in today. And remember, Farm Bureau has a place for you. Be sure to subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with your friends on socials. You can also visit our website, MaricopaCountyFB.org, for more information and to submit a topic you want to learn about. Remember to tune in every Wednesday wherever you listen to podcasts. A huge thank you to Paloma Ready Mix and Materials for supporting our agriculture producers and this podcast. Maricopa County Farm Bureau, bringing you the stories of real families, real farms, and real food. I'm Nicole Clements, signing off. Catch you next week.